Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today we're going to talk about a strip that's moved over from the Discover side recently onto the Featured side. It has a lot of different elements. It's one of those strips that really mixes genres. It's very exciting, I should say. It's called Purple Hyacinth, and I hope I'm saying that correctly. And we'll get into the meaning of that in just a minute here, but I want to welcome the creators of the strip to the show. It's actually a team here, which I like that. I like when it's a team because I always feel like when it's just one person doing a strip, man, that's a lot of work. So I'd like to welcome Sophism and Ephemeris to the show. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So we should get it out of the way. Did I say the name correctly? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And it's actually the name of a flower, and we'll get into all that and the meaning behind that. But I have to ask you to, I always do this when somebody comes on for the first time, kind of about their secret origins, starting way back when they first started reading comics, or maybe it was manga or anime or whatever it was that got you into this, kind of started you on your journey that eventually led you to becoming a creator. So we'll start with you, F. What's kind of your background with comics and sequential art? Did you grow up reading them? What was your doorway into this medium?
Yeah, well, I've been reading comics like for a long time. I've watched animes, read mangas and everything. I've also read a couple of webtoons, but I certainly never wrote one before, so like it's really, well, it's the first time. I'm used to write like short stories and novels, but it's really interesting to switch to writing webtoons now. It's actually, when I was little, I used to always dream about like creating a manga or an anime, and now I get this. I have this chance to create a webtoon with my friends, so it's really awesome.
And what about you, Sophism? What was your gateway into the medium?
It's not, like the same. So, like when I was a kid, I'm like Asian, so I get like all the my childhood was like filled with Doraemon and like Detective Conan, and so that was like my introduction to anime. And I also read like a bunch of mangas, but never like too much. And then when I was a kid, like 12, I was like, oh, that job seems very cool, but I never thought it was possible. Like I never really thought into it. And then I discovered Webtoon, and I saw that was like opportunity for me to create something. So that's how I got into it.
Okay, so did you two, obviously your friends, did you meet through the project or did you meet before? Like, did you already know each other before? And did you, and if so, did you have this shared interest in comics and manga and all, and webtoon and all that?
So
yeah, we've known each other since high school.
Yeah. We had like a common friend, and that was like back in grade 7. Yeah, we had a common friend. That's how we met. And then we had classes together, like math and history. Yeah.
And we used to always like draw during our classes, and we're like, hey, like you're good at drawing. And
yeah, we're like compared
to good at drawing too. So, wow.
So was it pretty early on? Was it pretty early on in your friendship that you realized you had this, this common interest of manga and sequential storytelling?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah. But we never like thought early on that we're gonna like do a comic together. That was like 2 years ago, I think. Yeah, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So you both had been readers of strips on Webtoon, and did you decide together, hey, let's try to create something on our own, or did one kind of bring the idea to the other? Like, how did that happen? How did you two decide, hey, we're gonna make the leap to creating our own strip?
So pretty much I was the one that discovered Line Webtoon.
Yeah.
And I drew Life before this Discover. And then that's how F knew about Webtoon, because I showed it to her. And then at one point I was like, it would be very nice if in the future we do like a Webtoon together. And that's how it happened. And that was like 2 years ago.
Cool. So you mentioned Life as previous work. Anything else that we could be on the lookout for that you've done previously to Purple Hyacinth?
There's nothing for me.
Nothing for me.
Well, then I'm even more impressed by the quality of the story and how it's been unfolding so far. I haven't gone and read any of the Discover side. I'm just reading it on the featured side. So only 4 episodes out so far, plus a prologue, which is just like a full episode, really. So it's really 5 episodes. And the quality is second to none and a very intriguing start. So
Thank you very much.
F, why don't you give our listeners an idea of what the story is all about?
All right, so the story is about a cop, Lauren, who is basically teaming up with an assassin to beat a common enemy. Well, yeah, well, they have this common goal to stop the Phantom Side organization, which is a criminal organization. And they both want to find the leader of this organization who is anonymous and basically stop him. And
All right. And as we mentioned, the purple hyacinth, what is the significance of that title? Because I didn't even realize it was a flower. I'm like, wait, what is that? And so I Googled it, like we all do, and we're not sure what something is. I saw that it was a flower, and then I know just from previous reading that there's a language of flowers, and different flowers have different meanings, and back in different times, you could send secret coded messages by what flowers were in the arrangements, and if you knew the language of flowers. And so wondering if there's any significance to that.
So, yeah, we did a lot of research behind the flower. Actually, we had to, like, pick a flower from the start. We had to pick a flower, and then I just went over, like, a list of flowers and just looked at it. So the title has, like, a lot of meaning behind it, and I won't say too much about it, but, like, it's much more than what people think would expect from what they already have.
So was that a challenge to find a? First of all, you had to find a flower that looked good visually, right? And then you also had to find something that would sort of suit the theme of the story. I mean, we're not going to get into the meaning of the flower because we don't want to spoil. Because again, there's so much there and so much depth, and it'll even more, I imagine, will be revealed as the story goes on. But was it a challenge to settle on something that worked as far as meaning and then also looked good graphically?
Actually, it was pretty easy. Like, we saw it, and then we were like, this is it, and that's it. Yeah.
It's nice when the stars align and things kind of click into place like that, right?
Yeah.
I also find it interesting, and I have no idea, so this is not really a spoiler, because I absolutely have no idea, but one thing that I did notice when I looked up the flower is that it's a poisonous flower. Not like, you know, super poisonous, like what's the stuff you make out of, like castor beans or whatever. Can't think of it right now. But anyway, it's not super poisonous, but like in high doses, if you were to like eat this flower, it would ricin is what I was trying to think of. But yeah, so I find that to be interesting too, because it's a beautiful looking flower, but it's also in a way kind of dangerous. Like if you were to handle it a lot, like it'll even irritate your skin. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I look forward to finding out more about the meaning and how you two are like playing into the like depth of the meaning of the flower and also the way it looks. And I don't know, it's a very interesting and intriguing layer to add to the story, because it's just a title. And, you know, when people read it, they're not necessarily thinking, oh, I wonder what that is. But again, if you do a little research, you can get more out of it. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Did you always know you were going to name it after a flower, name the strip after a flower?
No, we didn't know what to name it. But then we got the flower, and then I kind of suggested the title as a joke, because I was like,
I liked it a lot.
I was like, this sounds pretty bad. No one's going to know what this is. And then F was just like, this is it. We're going to use that. And then that's how it happened.
I think it's a completely inspired choice. So I also want to talk a little bit about the setting, because that kind of hits you right away. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily obvious, like what time period is, what like physical setting. Is it London? There's kind of a Victorian feel. So maybe, F, you could talk a little bit about the setting, why you chose it, what the setting actually is, and kind of the inspirations that you drew from, just kind of set up the background of the story.
Yeah, well, like, first, it's really not meant to be historically accurate, so it's not set in any location, like, that's real. It's set in a fictional city called Ardalis, in a fictional world. It's inspired by the Victorian era and the beginning of the 20th century, because Sophie and I, we both like the fashion, and in general, we like this era, so we decided to use that as an inspiration for the setting, but otherwise it's really, it's all fictional. It's not meant to be like accurate or anything.
That's cool, because it gives you a lot of freedom to
play around. But that's also what we wanted.
Well, the other thing about the Victorian era though, right, there's this like sheen of like propriety, like everybody's like prim and proper and manners and such. Then we have this, it's juxtaposed with this kind of violent story you're telling of like assassins and murder, and it just, it seems like the perfect sort of setting. So when you're, when you were developing the story, did you always know that you were going to put it in this type of sort of faux Victorian time period?
So we actually decided on the setting before we even started the story. Like when we said that we're going to do a comic together, we were like, this is going to be some Victorian setting design. And that was like before we did the story. So, yeah.
Wow, that's very interesting. I don't think most stories start with either an idea or a theme that they want to explore, or maybe have an idea for a great character. I don't know.
So, yeah, we decided on the setting like a few months before we had the idea. It was just like we really wanted something that was like with that kind of fashion.
Yeah,
that's really
cool. And with police officers.
Yeah, and then you build out from around that, right? So yeah, it's just an interesting way to go about. So many people, you know, it's an idea or a character first, and here you had the setting first. But what's interesting about that is I always say some of the best books, some of the best stories, the setting, whether that be the city or the time period or whatever the background, physical background is, if it's done really well, it becomes a character in and of itself, right? Like Gotham City is a character, has its own sort of personality. And so really, you started with this city and the setting as your character and then inhabited it with other characters. Really, you could think of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to the design of the world, in terms of the setting, the buildings, the costumes, you obviously both had a real affinity for this time period. So was it a challenge to flesh it out, or as the story sort of started developing, everything just sort of fell into place? Like, how much research did you have to do? Again, we know it's not a real place, a real historical, historically accurate, but obviously you're drawing inspiration from that. So how much research did you have to do, and how intricate did you go? Did you look at Victorian style buildings? Did you look at Victorian style costumes, or did you just want to kind of capture the feel and make sure you kept the freedom to make it its own identity?
So I did do a lot of research. Like, since we didn't set on any specific era, I did like research on many eras, and most of the time I would just like go on Pinterest. Like even now, like yesterday, like today I was on Pinterest, and I would just like look at designs and like get ideas, like get a brainstorm of ideas and put together what I like. And many times I would also ask F what she would like to see, but she is much more she knows more about like those historical settings than I do. So I ask her a lot about the design she wants, and then she sketches them out for me sometimes or show me pictures, and that helps me.
Now, the other thing that's very apparent, and it's kind of below the surface in these first five episodes we've seen so far, we're just barely scratching the surface, but clearly there's a lot of political machinations going on behind the scenes. We just found out there's kind of this ruling family, or this ruling class that a couple of the victims were associated with, and there may be something there. So F, I wonder if you can shed some light onto the politics of this world that you've created, and give us an idea of kind of the lay of the land as we're going forward.
Okay, so, well, obviously there's a royal family ruling over the country, and the fandom side is, well, they're kind of, like, fighting against this royal family because they're targeting all the people who are in favor of the king, and, yeah, so, like, the monarchy is, well, usually, well, people like the monarchy, but in the past years, the previous kings were not really fair and were not really paying attention to the poor people. So this created a lot of frustration in the city. And basically, that's why loads of people started to join the Phantom side, and the Phantom side grew in size and in power. So, yeah, also, like, I don't know what I can say without spoiling too much, but... yeah, so there's a royal family, and, well, it's, like, the current king is kind of fair, is okay, but so the people are so frustrated that they want to just get rid of it, and that's why, like, as we saw in the episodes that are there on Webtoon, people who are publicly supporting the royal family are usually targeted by the fandom side, and
so it's fair to say, again, we don't want to get spoilery, but it's fair to say that the politics of the day in the story will be a factor in the story, and it's yes, much more complicated than just black and white, yeah, good guys versus bad guys, right?
Yeah.
So I like that. I like when it kind of has that layer and that depth, because it keeps you guessing, right? And the other thing that can happen if it's everything is black and white is it can get boring, right? And it's hard to relate. So when characters have motivations, whether they be a protagonist or an antagonist, that you can relate to, then it makes, you know, them more interesting, and we can kind of understand where they're coming from. One thing I noticed right away that was pretty interesting, and maybe if you can speak to this, the police wear masks, like these half masks that cover. That's very unique. What can you tell us a little bit about the decisions and why you decided to make that design choice?
Yes. Well, what we decided is that, like, the police would wear masks because while they're on duty, they are supposed to leave behind, like, their point of views, their political stances, and their subjectivity. So basically, their identity disappears behind the mask that they wear. Like, they aren't individuals. They are all, like, kind of united under this symbol. And yeah, so, like, the goal is to represent that, and also to protect the identity of the police officers, because, well, you don't really want to get recognized when you're chasing, like, super dangerous criminals. So, that's basically it.
Yeah, I thought
it's really, like, a symbol and also for protection.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case. It might be for protection when you think about it. And I thought, why we should do that in real? And then I thought, well, wait, it would in theory work great if you could be 100% sure that there weren't any corrupt police officers, right? Because then it's the other side. They have a mask, and if they do something wrong, you can't identify them. So I just thought it was really cool, so I wanted to ask about that. The other thing I wanted to do was maybe give a rundown to for the listeners of the characters that we've been introduced so far. You mentioned Lauren, and we haven't even touched on this kind of unique attribute that she has, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But who are some of the other players that we've met so far who are going to become important to the story going forward?
So we have, like, four main characters, Lauren, Papyrusin, Kim, and William. There will be, like, more interaction between those four in the future. So Lauren, she is a police officer working in the patrol unit. She was a detective before in the investigation unit before, and then she got, like, switched in the patrol unit because of some event that happened that I cannot say now. And she is driven by a tragic event that happened in the past, and she's still, like, trying to move on and do something about it, but she is, like, failing at that. Yeah.
And well, then we have like the Purple Hyacinth, the assassin. So the Purple Hyacinth is the most dangerous criminal in the city. He's the most like dreadful weapon that the Phantom Sight has, and he's committed the most horrible crimes in the city. So like, whenever he kills someone, he always leaves the Purple Hyacinth behind him, and it's always like it always creates like mass panic throughout the city when he does something or when people see him running on rooftops at night. So like, he's really dangerous.
Yeah. And then we have Kim. She's like the comedy relief of the whole dramatic dark setting. She is a surgeon in the patrol unit in the same precinct as Lauren. She's very goofy. Like, she's like always joking, like super energetic. She always carries a pendant with her, and she likes to annoy William.
And then we have William, who's a lieutenant. He's also Lauren's childhood friend. They've been to the police academy together, and they both graduated early because they were really good. And yeah, he's, well, the kind of the perfect handsome guy out there, and he always gets really annoyed by Kim.
Yeah, those two don't seem to get it. They both really care about Loren. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they kind of are oil and water. They don't necessarily get along. They don't mix.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing about Lauren, obviously you mentioned the tragedy in her past, which we've gotten some hints about. So far we haven't gotten too many answers, but it's pretty obvious that it's her motivation and what makes her such a driven individual. The other thing that we learned really early on is she has this ability to, with 100% accuracy, know when someone is lying, which is a pretty cool power in a way. Can you talk a little bit about that? And you don't necessarily have to give away, we haven't learned how she got it, but just talk a little bit about that and kind of how she uses that in her her quest to find the truth, basically.
Well, for sure it helps her to like, yeah, well, her power is really unique, and it's not like a supernatural power necessarily. We try to depict it more as an ability to detect the change, a change in the voice of the people when they lie. And, well, while it does not give, like, it does not give her the right answers, she can cross out, like, the lies, at least, when she talks with people. So, yeah, we can't say too much about it. But, yeah, so if, I don't know if you can add anything more.
Well, I just... It's interesting to me because, okay, she knows when somebody says something, if it's the truth or a lie, but she doesn't have any context. So just because somebody is saying something that's not true, she knows, okay, what they just said is not true, but she doesn't know why. She doesn't know.
Exactly. Yeah, and also her ability is not like something that detects the absolute truth. Like, she only hears the subjectivity of the people.
Right. So, I mean, if it's her detecting inflection in the voice, it could possibly be that somebody who is telling a lie, but they themselves don't know it's a lie, or they believe so much in the lie that they wouldn't give themselves away, could fool her as well. So it's not like this great superpower that makes her like all knowing and wise. And in a way, it almost makes her more vulnerable if she like relies on it too much and uses it as a crutch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is she the only one that's going to manifest kind of a, I don't want to say a superpower, because it's not, as you said, to that level, but are there other people who are going to kind of show these skills that kind of go beyond the norm?
No.
She's unique in that aspect. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. F, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the early stages of the story. We already talked about how you had the setting first. You wanted to tell a story, mm-hmm. kind of a Victorian setting, but without nailing yourself down to a specific time period and needing to be historically accurate. So once you had that setting and then you set about deciding, okay, what's the story we want to tell? Did it happen pretty quickly? Did you bounce different ideas back and forth before you settled on this? What was that process like?
Well, for sure, it took us a while to come up with the story, like, to come up with a clear idea of what we wanted. There's a lot of stuff that we were really sure we wanted to have. And then, like, it took us some time to develop all the mystery and the plot in itself. But, basically one day, Soph came to my house, and I think we talked about the story for, 15 hours straight, and we basically created the plot on that day. And from that moment on, we just continued to add details, to change stuff around, it was quick, and we're still even now we're still building the story. So it's always changing, it's always evolving.
So you kind of got the bones of it really quick, yeah. But you're still, which is, again, a sign of, good collaboration, good storytelling. Because as the characters grow and evolve, the story's going to change organically when you realize, oh, we were going to have this character do this or say this, and now that doesn't necessarily suit who the character has become. So that's perfectly fine, I would say.
Yeah.
Now, can you go through the workflow of creating an episode? Obviously, you have that big outline, the backbone, but you're still fleshing things out in terms of, maybe some plot points or the pacing and such. So give us an idea of a typical episode and how the collaboration works between you two.
So, well, sorry, do you want to say it?
Well, yeah, okay. First we create an outline. We decide what we wanted in the story and what each and every episode would look like. And then once we both agree on what we want in an episode, I write a script. And then Soph takes the script and draws the storyboard and everything else.
Now, you said that you do some drawing as well. But obviously, Soph handles the heavy lifting. But being that you have some experience drawing and illustrating yourself, does that help you when you start laying out kind of the script and the flow and the pacing of the episodes, because you do have a little bit of that artistic experience?
Well, to be honest, I don't draw. My drawing is pretty much inexistent. I drew the Royal logo, and that's pretty much it in the webtoon. But it's really Soph that's doing all the work, and it's a lot of work. But usually, when I'm writing the script, I'm always talking with her and asking her, is it too long? How would you see that? What would you like? Or, we're always talking to each other to make sure that my scripts are manageable for her, and also we're exchanging ideas and everything. So when I'm writing a script, I'm trying to give as much, as many details as possible. I'm not only writing the dialogue, but also a few indications on, you could do a panel like this, or, I'm trying to give her ideas, but she's really doing all the storyboards and all the drawing itself.
Right. So it's basically a full script, but you're talking the whole time to make sure that it's suiting her, what she wants and what she does. I mean, because she's co-creator, right? I mean, you two developed the story yourself, so it's not like you're writing the script in a vacuum and then handing it off to her and she's coming back asking questions. I mean, it's back and forth all the time.
Yeah, it's really back and forth all the time.
Yeah, now, Soph, I really want to congratulate you, I guess, and give you your props, because this is a very kinetic style that you have. Maybe the most sense of movement and style that really takes advantage of the vertical scroll on Webtoon that I've seen in a long time. And it's not just the action. It's not just the action of the characters, but even in that prologue, right away, I was struck with the use of color, the use of design. It felt like you really were taking advantage of that, that vertical scroll to give a sense of movement. with the colors that really jumped off, especially the reds and the golds and smoke from the gun and blood and all that. It was very impactful. So right away, before I even got maybe 25% of the way through the prologue, I was like really impressed with the graphic style. And then as I went through the episodes, especially with the fights, obviously, a lot of sense of movement, like I said, very kinetic and impactful. But at the same time, in a lot of those fights, you're very minimal on your backgrounds, which even makes those characters jump off the screen even more. So can you talk a little bit about developing the style and the way you make those decisions on when you're going to go with little to no background, when you're going to go detail? And then also there's a few times where you get really cartoony, and that adds something to the story as well.
Okay, first of all, thank you very much for the whole critique. It was nice. Okay, so the scrolling thing, there was actually a lot of help from my editors. I had like two back then for prologue. There was Paul and HB. They actually like improved it by a lot for the whole scrolling experience and all. The colors, I actually like redrew the prologue. Like we drew the prologue 3 months before launch, and then we didn't like it. So we started it, showed an idea, and it didn't work. So we went back to the prologue we had, and I just like I went over the whole thing, and I just like gave it so much more colors and light and movement. It's so different from like the first version we had. Like it was kind of like gray. There were no like light effects and stuff like that. So that changed a lot. What were the other questions? Oh yeah, the background. So I like the cinematic effect of on things. Like I want the webtoon to be like a movie. Cause like we got the whole like soundtrack going on that make you feel like it's a movie. And the background, I would mostly use a blur. Like I usually blur like all my backgrounds. So like the characters will stand out more. And when it's like action scenes, I don't use much background. It's more like a gradient to give like atmosphere. But if I have background, it kind of, cause like it's so detailed sometimes that we don't know what the action is about. So I just like don't use background at all. And for the comedy scenes, it will be more cartoony. So it's like not as serious.
Yeah, basically when Kim's on the page, banging her head into windows.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. I like that.
Now you mentioned how much your editors helped you out early on, yeah, especially with the vertical scroll. We'll talk a little bit about that when we talk, kind of shift gears and talk about the platform itself. But I wanted to ask you, now that you've been on the platform for a while, has it gotten easier? Do you feel like you're taking advantage more of the kind of the vertical scroll and the format? Like it's coming more naturally to you than when you first started?
Yes, a lot. Like when I first started, I had like no knowledge at all. Like I didn't read much webtoon. Like I only read maybe Unordinary, and that was like my whole webtoon knowledge I had. So yeah, like when I started, I knew nothing. It was very bad. I don't know how it got like popular like it did. But even like from discovered to featured, there's so much improvement. I have more, I don't know, I feel more free drawing with the vertical format now. It's also like very helpful for like impact shots, like when you want it to be very impactful, so it takes like the whole page. And also it kind of influences the pacing. So when it's like action scenes, if you want that movement to be quick, then that panel will be like smaller, like takes less place.
Right.
And then if it's like slow motion, that's like in the prologue what I tried to do when I kind of like flipped it, you know, like she was kind of running horizontal, and then like all the other panels were like vertical. So I tried to do some kind of like slow motion going on. Like the whole scene is like 3 seconds. But I want to like drag it very long, so it feels like it's very slow.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone flip a panel on its side like that. That was really cool. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I like that. So well, let's change gears here. We'll talk a little bit about the platform. I know that I say this all the time when I do these Webtoon Wednesdays. The Webtoon deadline is always looming, so I don't want to keep you too long. But F, I wonder if you could tell us about how the project ended up on the featured side. Obviously, you mentioned about discovering Webtoon and deciding to create a project there on the Discover side. How did you transition over to featured? What was that process?
You're asking me or F?
F.
Okay.
Oh, I think Soph is, she could answer that better than I could.
Great.
Yeah, okay. Transitioning to featured. So I have, like, some friends that got featured before me, and they were, like, they became more stressed. Like, I heard a lot of, they got more work and they took things more seriously and everything was like more stressful, and I wasn't feeling it. I was like, that's kind of what I wanted to do. I'll be like so excited. But then when I got a contract and then I moved to featured, it was so much more work, but it was like worth it because we were working with the editors and they were giving like so much insights and everything. But that was like, there were a lot of discussion going on, and like, we had to change things in our story because there were, like, some issues that we had to fix. And, it was hard, but it was, like, very worth it. Like, the end result was very good. I'm very satisfied with all the hard work we did for the past months.
So it gives hope to all those that are out there on Discover now. If you put out a quality project, then, I mean, Webtoon, the powers that be behind the scenes, are always scouring Discover to find stories that they feel are worthy to be on featured, and they'll reach out to you, and then the ball's kind of in your court, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you first put the strip out on the Discover side, did it find an audience right away, or did it take a little bit of time to sort of build?
We were surprised by how much audience we got. Like, my expectation was like 20,000 subscribers after 3 months. That was like my goal. And then I was like so surprised when I just put it out there. And then we got, I think we got 100,000 after 1 month. Wow. And I was so shocked, but very grateful.
Now the strip really seems to have kind of something for everyone. We have the, obviously the action, there's the kind of prim and proper Victorian setting like we talked about, which is really interesting. There's maybe a little bit of romance that I could see blossoming. Yep. It certainly seems like Loren could have interests in several different characters that we've been introduced to so far. So now that you've moved over to the featured, is there an audience that you think maybe isn't reading the strip that you think should give it a try, whether it's somebody who's into traditional romance or a slice of life, or I don't know. I just think it kind of transcends so many different audiences.
Yeah.
Like people that would be into superheroes.
I think like anyone can read Papyrus. And you got, like, I was trying to pin down, like, back in Discover, I was trying to pin down like which genre we're gonna use. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard. Like, there's like so many different things going on in the Webtoon, and even my friends, they're like joking, like, why am I not in comedy? Because like, we make some crime scenes that is supposed to be like very dark and serious, and then we put like comedy inside. I would say that people who like romance should read the Webtoon, because I think, okay, Pippa Hyacinth was kind of like marketed and advertised as like crime mystery. But it's not like, it's not the main thing going on. There's actually like romance. So I think people would very enjoy that. But it's not a love triangle. Just gonna say that. Yeah.
All right. Are there, you mentioned how fast the strip kind of took off, 100,000 subscribers in a month, which is just extraordinary. I had no idea it blew up that fast. So congratulations on that.
You
must have had a lot of really cool fan and reader interactions with it taking off so fast. Any that stand out in your mind for either one of you?
Yeah. So there's like one, it was like, I think last year, but maybe not from Cobiasen, I don't remember, but like the I talked to them like on Instagram, and they were like very calm, like very behaved and everything. Like some people, they kind of like screamed, but they were very behaved. And then we talked for just a very short time, and they had to go to bed. So it was like, okay. And they left for like 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes later, I got a message. It was like a huge paragraph from like the same reader. And it was just like them screaming. Like it was like a big bang girly moment, but like it wasn't sent, it wasn't supposed to be sent to me, like it was supposed to be sent to their friend.
Oh man.
It got to, it was like, okay. Yeah, that was funny.
So do you feel like you have a pretty good fan base, pretty solid fan base now that are gonna support Purple Hyacinth and future strips that you do as well? Like you feel like you have a good, you've created a good webtoon community for yourselves?
Yes. I think my fans are amazing. I'm very grateful for all the support.
Yeah, and speaking of support, I did want to give you both a chance. We talked a little bit about editorial help in the beginning. Can you tell us how it's been like most valuable to you? I mean, so many of the creators just praise their editors, saying how much they've helped improve the strip. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, for sure, our editors did help us a lot. Like, for example, for me, like, HB Klein has helped me improve my scripts a lot. Like, English is actually my second language, so sometimes I have a hard time trying to, like, really express what I want, or, you know, sometimes my writing is just awkward. So, like, he's helped me a lot. He gave me many ideas, and he's really thoughtful, really creative, and patient and everything. It's really great to have him in our team.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and then we also got, we had like two editors from the start. So we had like HB and Paul. Paul helped me a lot on the graphic side. Like the prologue ideas were a lot from him, and I learned a lot from him. He taught me many, many things. We had like long discussions, and he was just like teaching me stuff I would never learn in college. So yeah, that was very nice. And then HB, the editor we have now, I love them. They're very funny, and they're patient, and they always try to understand what we want, and then try to find something that we both will agree on. I think it's very amazing. I love working with them.
Yeah. It's all in service to the story, right? And making the strip the best that it can be. Now, have you had much chance to interact with kind of the webtoon creator community as well? Because there's so many creators that come on and just like everyone praises the editors. Everybody talks about how supportive the creative community is. So have you had a chance to interact with some other creators, whether that be in real life or online?
Yes, I don't know how many I've talked to, but quite a lot, I think. I have met some in real life when I went to the New York Comic Con. But that's pretty much it. Yeah, it was fun. It's always nice to like learn from them, and then we were also like, we would discuss things that no one else would have understood, because no one worked like a webtoon artist. We just like draw all day, so it's really hard to find someone that can understand the pain and the fun, but also the pain. So yeah, it's very, very nice to have met them.
Yeah, I hear that a lot from creators that get a chance to go to the conventions, and hey, it's like nobody will understand like the deadline crunch and just the strange day-to-day life you live as a webtoon creator. Sometimes, you know, you go several days without ever going outside because you're under deadline, and nobody will quite understand that like another webtoon creator, so that's great. Well, I wanted to give you two, well, first of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to join me. Congratulations on the success of Purple Hyacinth. Very intriguing story. I can't wait to read more. But I'll open the floor to you now. Anything you want to say to your readers or the listeners, anything you want to add at all? Why don't you go first, Steph?
Oh, I'm just, I don't know, like, thank you very much for the support of the fans. Like, it's really incredible that it's really incredible to see that the people get involved in the story in the comments and see that they love it and that they want more. It's really motivating for us, and it feels great to be able to see that the fans enjoy what we do. And yeah, it really motivates us to continue our hard work. And yeah.
All right. So,
I want to say that one of the things I like the most drawing Webtoon is like kind of reach out to my readers. And for me, my favorite thing to do is like to make people laugh. And I'm very happy that I have many readers and I can just make their day with an episode. And it's really nice to hear from them when they say they like it. Also, I want to say that the butler is going to come back big time. So I'm ready for that. Yeah.
All right, and I'll give you two both a chance to plug any social media where your fans can go and follow your work and find out when new things are coming down the pipe. Why don't you go first, Soph?
Okay, so we both use Instagram. My username is Dead Sophism, and also don't ask about it. we have Patreon. It's just like Sophism. Just search Sophism. You would find me. Yeah, it would be very nice to support me on it. Thank you very much.
And F?
Yeah, well, I also have an Instagram account, EphemerisBH, and it's basically just a random, like, it's just a meme page, basically. We just post sometimes our conversations and, I don't know, like, behind the scenes. That's pretty much it.
Links to both Instagrams and the Patreon in the show notes, everybody. So if you want to follow them or you're having trouble finding them on Instagram, you can go there, click, and you'll find it right there. So again, thanks you two for joining.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank you.
My pleasure. The strip is a super high quality, some of the best production value I've seen on Webtoon. Like I said, I was happy when I realized there was two of you because it's just a tremendous amount of work and you're really killing it.
I got like more people helping me. It's not just me. I wouldn't have survived a week. So yeah, like I'm very thankful for my assistance.
Awesome. Great. Well, again, congratulations. Thanks for joining us. Best of luck with the strip in the future. And you know, maybe when it comes time for season two, we'll have to have you back on.
Thank you very much.
It will be great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast, hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.